Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The Democratic presidential nomination is down to a two-person race after former Vice President Joe Biden's dominating 10-state win on Super Tuesday this week. Biden's comeback victories gave him more pledged delegates than Senator Bernie Sanders. But it is a tight competition, with still more than half the country yet to vote or caucus. Pennsylvania's primary is traditionally late after other states, and often the nominations are settled by then. But this year's April 28th primary could be different. To discuss all these things, political, especially looking at the Democratic side today, is Dr. Fletcher McClellan, professor of political science at Elizabethtown College. Dr. McClellan, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks, Scott.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And before we begin our discussion, just wanted to give you a little bit of a, I don't know if I'd say a warning, but to tell you something that's coming up. Governor Tom Wolf is making an announcement at 9:30 regarding the coronavirus and here in Pennsylvania. And we will join that live. That's coming up at 9:30 here on WITF. Fletcher McClellan, a few days after Super Tuesday, you've had some time to think about what happened Tuesday. So how would you assess the Democratic race at this point?
Okay. Well, this was one of the, I think, most remarkable weeks in American electoral history because just a week ago, Bernie Sanders had won Nevada. He had won New Hampshire. Joe Biden had finished third and fifth in primaries, and he was basically broke. He wasn't campaigning anywhere. And then had this remarkable victory in South Carolina, where he won an overwhelming share of the black vote. And this started a tsunami of positive media coverage and candidates dropping out and endorsing him, Mayor Buttigieg, Senator Klobuchar. And then a really tremendous showing on Tuesday where he was carrying states that he had not campaigned in, had not advertised in. He swept the South. He carried Texas. He carried New England states, Elizabeth Warren's home state of Massachusetts. And from being counted out, he now, I would say, is the front runner in the race. He has maybe something like a 50 to 100 delegate lead. We won't know until all the votes are counted in California, which is the one thing that Senator Sanders won and fairly convincingly, depending on the vote count. But and I happen to like Vice President Biden's chances going forward. There are a number of states that look good for him, especially once again in the South, where there's heavily African-American populations. There are a couple of stages, though. Next week is a Michigan primary. Senator Sanders really sort of needs to win that. He needs to show the strength in the Midwest that he showed 4 years ago. Then there's a big block of primaries on the 17th. There's Florida and Illinois and Ohio. There's 500 delegates there. Then, you know, we almost skip over. There are a couple of important states in between. But then we get to April 28th, where Pennsylvania is voting with New York and Connecticut and Rhode Island. Another 500 delegates there. So there's a lot to go between now and April 28th. But we have a two-man race.
Well, before we look back, because I do want to provide some analysis of what happened in the past week. But since you mentioned Pennsylvania's April 28th primary, and as I said in the introduction, historically, Pennsylvania's primary being later than the other states, that Pennsylvania hasn't mattered much when it came to choosing nominees. Do you think that this race will be close enough that Pennsylvania may have a say come, I mean, this is almost 2 months away?
Certainly the chances have improved. There still is a lot to go. I think Vice President Biden has an opportunity to deliver a knockout blow at several stages. Once again, first of all, here's Michigan, and which I think Senator Sanders needs to win. And but there is all this positive momentum going on for the vice president. Then there are some major states like Florida and Georgia. I expect, especially in Georgia, Vice President Biden to do well there, and a number of other southern states. So it could get around to the point that by the time we get to April 28th, that Biden has a almost insurmountable lead. On the other hand, with two men going back and forth, the vote being split, I expect it is going to be fairly close. And the other thing, of course, it's almost like an eternity in the next 6 weeks. And the focus is going to finally once again be on Vice President Biden. We've gone through a whole series of candidates, which once they hit front runner status, they received very strong scrutiny, and for whatever reason, weren't able to stand up to the test. We started with Biden first, and then Senator Warren and Mayor Buttigieg, and there was a boomlet for Mike Bloomberg, and then there was Senator Sanders, and each of these candidates have failed to, once they've been scrutinized, the flaws have been exposed. And Vice President Biden, with a very long record, he's very gaffe prone. The Republicans are going to start zeroing in on him. Senator Sanders is going to campaign and really going to go after the vice president's record on things like on things such as trade. There's going to be a couple more debates. So and there's events such as the coronavirus and who knows what else is going to happen. So there's a lot that's going to happen between now and April 28th. But we Pennsylvania, I think, has a chance to be a player in this.
So let's, most of the time when you're talking about these things, you're focusing on the positives, the support. Mm-hmm. But I get the sense that this year is different, that the negatives, meaning what voters don't like about candidates, could be more important than even what they do like about candidates. All right, so let's talk about Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. As you said, going into South Carolina, he had all the momentum. Yeah. Some of the things that you said about Joe Biden and his momentum were exact wording, just replacing Sanders' name a week ago when people were saying, if Biden doesn't do well in South Carolina, Sanders hasn't won. It's hard to see how he could be beaten. Well, now, a week later, Sanders is trailing and Biden seems to have all the momentum. So my question is, what happened to Bernie Sanders? I mean, there is a school of thought out there that Sanders being that front runner after winning the first four contests, that Democratic voters decided he was too far left. Mm-hmm. The socialist identification got voters thinking he was too radical, that he had to be stopped, that he could not beat Donald Trump in the general election, and they went with the safe choice of Biden. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's pretty close. The one thing I reject is this idea that somehow the Democratic establishment or the corporate establishment ganged up on him and produced this result on Super Tuesday. I mean, what started this whole thing going were African-American voters in South Carolina. And I think they were attracted to Biden, as you say, as a safe choice, his connection to President Obama, his tone, which appears to voters to be more moderate, expressing concern about the need for decency in this country. I think the coronavirus, had a little bit of a role to play, especially on Super Tuesday, because all of a sudden people are wanting someone who they perceive to be a steady hand, someone, a competent hand. The Obama administration dealt with the Ebola virus very effectively. So I think you're right. The electorate, and I think, first of all, the African-American vote, the Democratic electorate is rather risk-averse. And, and they looked at Senator Sanders, and, you know, he didn't do anything differently. He's been saying the same thing for decades. And, you know, he's expanded his message somewhat. He talks about identity groups as well as the 1% and social class and all that. But he's been saying the same things. But it appeared, you know, that his support has a ceiling. He's never really been able to get above 30-35% in any election, in, you know, with the exception of Vermont, his home state. The one real breakthrough is his support among Latino voters, which we saw in Nevada and also in California. But he has never been able to take that step of being able to broaden his base beyond a strong core of support. Another thing,
mostly young people.
And that's the other thing I was going to say, that young folks are attracted to him and to his message, but especially in primaries, and more generally, but especially in primaries, younger people are less likely to vote. Older people and people who, you know, are more who vote frequently and know what primaries and caucuses are all about, they're the ones who tend to vote. And those were the ones who came out in South Carolina and came out in greater numbers on Super Tuesday. So counting on this expansion of the youth vote, I think, was a miscalculation.
You're listening to Smart Talk at WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up in just a little over 10 minutes, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf will be making an announcement about the coronavirus here in Pennsylvania. We will join that live. It is a press conference. We'll be joining Governor Wolf live coming up at 9:30 this morning. Right now, we're talking about the Democratic presidential race with Dr. Fletcher McClellan, professor of political science at Elizabethtown College. Before we go on to, and because I got a few emails here I want to get to. And I don't want to paint, you can't paint a brush of all voters. Everyone is different. Everyone has their own motivations. But as I kind of touched on this earlier, it seems as though there are a lot of voters this year whose main motivation is not so much support for their candidate as a calculation of whether their Democratic candidate can beat Donald Trump.
Yeah, and that's pretty problematic because, you know, from week to week, month to month, it appeared that someone new has appeared that might be that one. And, you know, some people have said that, you know, what Democrats are looking for is someone they can fall in love with, the way that they, you know, fell in love with Barack Obama. But, you know, Barack Obama, you know, isn't running. It's amazing to me, Scott, that, I mean, we had an amazing field of very talented candidates. Of course, we had 24 of them, many of them, you know, of diverse backgrounds, Senator Harris, Senator Gillibrand, Senator Klobuchar, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Andrew Yang. And, of course, we're down to two people nearing their 80s, two white men. It's amazing that we've gotten to this point, and I think it's all part of the sort of search for who can beat Donald Trump. I think Trump is in everyone's heads constantly. I'm like, he is the issue in this campaign. We can talk about health care. We can talk about climate change. We can talk about jobs and the economy, but he is the issue. Do you want four more years of this chaos? Some people enjoy it. Other people are repulsed, and even, you know, they're physically upset. So do we want four more years of this? And I think people are just sort of frantically looking for that person. And as I say, I think in this search, what they have gone back to is the familiar face, the connection to Obama, and a message that is more of restoration, decency, steady progress as opposed to revolutionary change. They've become, as I say, rather risk-averse, and they have sort of fallen on Vice President Biden.
Along those lines, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and I want to talk about her in just a moment, but one of the messages she left at one of her final campaign stops last week is she told voters from the stage, don't vote like a and think like a pundit. Mm-hmm. Vote from your hearts. And I got to thinking, that's exactly what you were just talking about, is people making, voters making a calculation based on who they think can beat the president rather than who they really support as far as the issues. And again, not everyone was that way, but there did seem to be a lot of that.
Right. Certainly in the run-up to the primaries and caucuses of this year, we saw a lot of that sort of flirting with one candidate or another. But, you know, we shouldn't undersell Joe Biden. I mean, he's been around for a long time. Not only is he familiar, but he's we could see this in South Carolina and an endorsement that Congressman Clyburn gave him, which was a very emotional appeal of support for the vice president. He's cultivated relationships with, you know, every interest group in the Democratic Party. He's and he projects himself, you know, as a decent, you know, concerned, empathetic individual. And this is sort of, you know, the opposite of what President Trump appears to be. So he may indeed be the right man with the right message for this time.
Email from Justin says, I voted in every election since I turned 18, but I noticed that many of my peers do not. When I ask them, they just share that they do not feel their vote counts and it is all rigged. What can we do to change this perception? What can we do to increase voter turnout? Why do you think it's such a struggle to incentivize people to vote?
This is a, you know, a perennial problem. It just isn't peculiar to this one year or this one election. American elections, we have had lower turnout than other countries. We've had lower turnout than we had back earlier in the 20th century. We should note, though, that voting turnout has increased in the last decade. The two Obama elections and the Trump election. We're expecting. I would be shocked if we didn't have record modern turnout this coming year.
Well, let me. Here's an email from a listener that is from Chanel, who is similar along the same lines. With the state of Pennsylvania voting so late after other states, do you think this affects the morale for people to participate in the voting process due to not feeling that it would really matter?
Absolutely, and it. You know, in some elections, we really haven't had much of a say because the election has already been decided. And that still might be a possibility this time around. I think there will be, though, there'll be lots of interest. If no other reason, President Trump, is, you know, who appeared in Scranton last night, he's going to keep his eye on Pennsylvania, keep the pot stirring. He's going to be supporting Bernie Sanders one way or another, either by supporting him or by trying to run down the vice president. But getting back to the initial question, I think you need, you know, this is like voting your heart. This is, you know, you need to talk to your friends and neighbors and get in conversation with them online. There's nothing stopping people from becoming more involved in the process. There are more tools that you have in being able to communicate with each other about the importance of the vote.
We have about 3 minutes before we pick up Governor Wolf. It would seem, just based on nothing else other than age, that this year, the Democratic candidate, whether it be Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, that the vice presidential candidate, the running mate, may be more important.
Given the age of the candidates, that's absolutely right. And I think it will be a strategic calculation for both. Now, I have a colleague, Dr. Kopko, in Elizabethtown College, who has done a book and is revising another edition of his book on vice presidents. And normally, vice presidents aren't necessarily going to make a difference politically. They can on the margins. But finding someone who is going to be a competent individual who can be president on the spot is going to be especially important this year when we have candidates that are as old as Senator Sanders and Vice President Biden.
And Senator Sanders, one of the issues certain to come up is his heart history. He had a heart attack during the campaign and hasn't released his medical records. I'm sure that's something that will be brought up by his opponents, Biden and President Trump. Someone else asked a question. Isn't this the same thing that happened to Sanders in the 2016 election? Wasn't it the Democratic National Committee who chose to support Clinton regardless of Sanders' popular vote?
Well, I reject that almost out of hand, because the reason Senator Sanders lost the nomination 4 years ago is that he got fewer votes than Hillary Clinton. Certainly the DNC, you know, supported Clinton and all that, but their influence on these primaries, and I mean, voters sort of took over, and Hillary won an overwhelming number of states, and I don't think the DNC has had much to do with what is happening now.
Mm-hmm. We only have a minute left before we pick up Governor Wolf and talking about the coronavirus, and Fletch McClellan from Elizabethtown College. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. So going forward, what to look for?
We just go week to week, a Michigan primary, then 2 weeks, Florida, Illinois, Ohio. The campaign is going to intensify, and there's going to be a lot more negative campaigning back and forth here with a couple of important debates coming up.
I understand that the governor is not ready to go yet, so we'll continue our conversation if that's okay with you.
Sure.
I want to go back with to Senator Elizabeth Warren. She dropped out because she did not see a way forward for the nomination. That disappointed a lot of her passionate supporters, especially women. I've seen a number of posts on social media of women who were just disappointed. One today has said that she feels deflated, that Elizabeth Warren was a candidate that had a plan for everything. Now, voters have said, usually they say, oh, we want a candidate who's going to talk about issues. Mm-hmm. We don't want someone who is being supported because of their personality, or we don't like the name calling, we don't like the negative ads, that kind of thing. Well, here was a candidate that had a plan and talked about issues, but yet it didn't, her candidacy, I mean, okay, now I understand that the governor is ready to go. So, Fletcher, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you everybody for being here. I think, as you know, in the last few hours, we received confirmation of two presumed, and I emphasize the word presumed, positive cases of COVID-19 or coronavirus in Pennsylvania. Now, I'm saying presumed positive for a reason, because the results have to be confirmed by the CDC. But we have two that we have tested in Pennsylvania, and so we're presuming positive. One is in Delaware County, and the other is in Wayne County. Both of the cases have been quarantined in their homes, and as you also probably know, the Bucks County five schools have been shut down by the superintendent and the health department there. So we're monitoring that situation in Bucks County. Our Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, will give an update on all of this in just a minute. But since the identification of the COVID-19 or coronavirus has been, again, since the identification, an emergency response team here in Pennsylvania, right here in this building, has been working diligently to develop a plan for when this virus inevitably arrived in Pennsylvania. The Department of Health set up an incident command center at the beginning of February, so it's been up for 5 weeks now, here in the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Building just down the hall. And they have been coordinating and monitoring the responses that we've been making. So I think they've been hard at work. There have been and will continue to be numerous daily briefings with the Federal Center for Disease Control. And also the Department of Health is coordinating with other state agencies and other states and relevant federal agencies. State agencies that they're dealing with here in Pennsylvania include PEMA, of course, the Departments of Human Services, Education, Military and Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, the Pennsylvania State Police, the Office of Administration, the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education, the Department of Aging, and the list goes on and on. Right now, the emphasis of the plan is mitigation tactics to keep this virus from spreading widely. The confirmation of these presumed positive cases should serve as a reminder of the role that every Pennsylvanian must continue to play. This is a responsibility that goes to almost 13 million of us in Pennsylvania. We have to control the spread of this disease by what we do day in, day out in our daily lives. So tactics like washing your hands for at least 20 seconds, basically that's as long as it takes to sing Happy Birthday twice, just as a guide. 20 seconds, covering your nose and mouth when you cough or sneeze, and not with your hands, but with your sleeve, your elbow. You can stop spreading the illness also just by not touching your face. So those things are important. If you feel ill, stay home. I'm encouraging employers to allow workers to take sick time. I'm also suggesting, if you can, offer telecommuting work and other options that allow employees to work without risk of sharing the disease. More information on prevention and the symptoms of the COVID-19 virus can be found by clicking the banner at the top of pa.gov. That's our website. We will continue to update that website as we gather more information. I want to emphasize that we all should remain calm here. Dr. Levine, our health secretary, has extensive background in medicine, and she's leading the team of highly trained medical and public health personnel who are fully prepared to continue to do what they've been doing for the last 5 weeks, and that is monitor the situation. So while the Department of Health is leading this response in conjunction with the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, they're also coordinating with every level of government in Pennsylvania, the federal government, and beyond, to tackle any issues that may come up. So I can assure you that our state government will continue to function smoothly as we respond to this public health issue, and we're prepared to take action on secondary issues just as we do with a natural disaster. So as the situation develops, we will continue to provide the public with information on the extent of the health crisis and our response. So again, please visit pa.gov and follow the banner link, or follow the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's official Facebook or Twitter pages. So now I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Rachel Levine, Secretary of Health for Department of Health, Pennsylvania. Dr. Levine.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning. Thank you for attending our latest update on the 2019 novel coronavirus, or COVID-19. As Governor Wolf has said, we have two individuals with presumed positive cases of COVID-19. They are both at home, they are in isolation or quarantine, and at the same time, they are in good physical condition. We also are aware that 5 schools in Central Bucks School District have closed out of an abundance of caution. We are working with our partners at the Bucks County Health Department and School District. And at this time, however, there are no confirmed cases in Bucks County. And the situation there is actually not related to any Pennsylvania exposure. It is not related to the 2 cases that we're discussing. We are working with our county and municipal health department partners to continue to test individuals that meet criteria for testing for COVID-19. Importantly, we are able now, as we have been reporting all week, to do testing for COVID-19 at our state public health laboratory in Exton, Pennsylvania. We are continuing to increase our testing capabilities at this state laboratory, and we are also aware that commercial labs are coming online to also begin testing. Our Pennsylvania response teams include our colleagues at PEMA, Pennsylvania Emergency Management Association, the Hospital and Health System Association of Pennsylvania, HAP, the Pennsylvania Medical Society, all of our courageous first responders, our county and municipal health department partners, and, as the governor mentioned, state, federal, and local partners. And we are all prepared to deal with disease outbreaks, including this one. We expect more cases to be confirmed in the upcoming days and weeks. And we want everyone to take action to help prevent the spread of this novel coronavirus, COVID-19. We will continue to update our website and have the latest information, tips, and preparation checklists on our Department of Health website, health.pa.gov, for you to use. Now, since the start of the flu season, we have encouraged Pennsylvanians to try to limit and stop the spread of diseases by washing your hands, as the governor said, for 20 seconds with warm water and soap, saying happy birthday twice, covering coughs and sneezes into your elbow, cleaning surfaces, not touching your face, because that if you touch a surface where there is a virus and then touch your face, that can theoretically lead to you're getting sick. And please, if you are sick, stay home. Those are the same healthy habits that we have been talking about all flu season. And people and families and individuals should continue to practice those to protect your family and yourself from the spread of this virus. As the situation evolves, we will continue to update Pennsylvanians through our website, our Facebook and Twitter account, and press conferences as necessary, such as this one. It is very important to remember that the most accurate and timely information regarding this outbreak is available through the governor's website, through where you can click to ours, the Department of Health website, as well as the website for the CDC, which has very accurate information. If you have questions about your health, please contact your health care provider. We have been updating providers regularly on how to assess patients and with information about testing. What is most important for Pennsylvanians to remember is that we are prepared to respond to an incident just like this one. We have the networks in place, and we are ready to ensure that we can continue to work towards a healthy Pennsylvania for all. Thank you.
Now, all of us would be happy to take questions. Yes.
Governor, can you talk a little bit about how these cases were discovered, how they came to the attention of hospitals or doctors or the
Dr. Levine, do you want to?
Sure. Again, we are in full incident command, and we have been for 5 weeks. And so our teams are in contact with hospitals, with healthcare providers, and through that network, we became aware of these patients. They were assessed by their doctor. Tests were performed, and then sent to obtained, then sent to our laboratory, and then turned out to be positive.
Can you discuss any?
At this time, I think that you can understand for their confidentiality, we're not discussing specifically how they were exposed, and we don't want to say who they are, et cetera, because that's according to our regulations, that's confidential information. Yes, sir.
But were they traveling? Were they coming back from any of these countries, or this is a community spread?
So these were not community transmission or community spread in Pennsylvania. So it's important to remember what that means from a public health perspective. Community transmission means that they are that people can get sick and they're tested for COVID-19, and we have no idea how they were exposed. This is not community transmission. So it was through some travel.
Were they coming back from China or elsewhere? And can you provide a rough timeline of how long they've been and back in Pennsylvania?
So we're not going through those exact details right now. But what happens now is that we will do contact tracing. So we know who these individuals are. We know their history in terms of how they contracted the virus. And so we will now be going systematically through contacts and assessing those who have been in contact with these people, doing appropriate testing, and then contacts will be quarantined. For up to, if they've had personal contact with this patient while they could have been sick, then they will be quarantined. So that's how this has gone in other states and how it will continue here. Dr. Watkins, is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
No.
Thank you. Dr. Sharon Watkins is our state epidemiologist. Ray Barashansky here is, of course, our deputy secretary for public health prevention and community protection and response. And, of course, you know Randy Padfield, our director of PEMA, and secretary of education here. Yes.
Dr. Levine, there's been some talk about the cost of a test. You know, people worry that they might get hit with a big bill. You mentioned commercial labs mm-hmm. at the beginning of the test. Like my question is, how does it stand right now as far as getting tests? I mean, for one thing, could someone decide that they want to be tested or they need to be tested, or how does it all play out?
Sure. So this has evolved over the last 5 weeks, right, in terms of testing. So until Monday, when we first started testing in our laboratory, all the tests for COVID-19, essentially throughout the country, were done by the CDC in Atlanta. And so if we had travel-related cases that we were concerned about, our epidemiologists would call the staff at CDC, have a robust discussion, and if they agreed, then the sample would be obtained, which is essentially a nasal pharyngeal swab. And then sent to CDC for testing. So they controlled all of the testing. As you know, there had been challenges getting the test kits to the states, and there had been issues with reagents. So that was worked out by the FDA and the CDC essentially over last weekend, and so last Friday and then during the weekend. And so our labs came up for testing as other state laboratories on Monday. And we are increasing our ability to test really almost every day. So I'll get to your question. it takes me a minute. So now what is happening since the testing is being done at our laboratory is that physician people who are concerned that they might have been exposed to COVID-19 would call our number, 1-877-PA-HEALTH, discuss it with our staff, or they would call their doctor or hospital, and then they would call us, decide whether the person met the CDC criteria for testing, and then we would obtain that testing. That's going to change now. The commercial laboratories will be available to test, and that we'll be pleased to consult with all people and doctors, but doctors will have the ability basically to assess and order a test. There is no cost for the testing at our state laboratory in Exton. We are covering that cost, and commercial laboratories, I'm sure, will be billing insurance. We have discussed this extensively with the Department of Human Services and Medicaid, as well as the Pennsylvania Insurance Department.
If a person is in a situation where it comes to the attention of the doctor, say, that they have likely symptoms and this warrants a test, mm-hmm. is it safe to say that test is going to be paid for by the state?
So if they obtain the specimen, they call us, and they obtain the specimen and it goes to our laboratory, that test is paid for by the state. Now that commercial laboratories are coming on board, then that test, if it's sent to one of the commercial laboratories, then their insurance should cover Pennsylvania Medicaid, or their commercial insurance or CHIP would cover the cost. We are working on what the issue will be for the small number of people, smaller number than before, in people in Pennsylvania who are uninsured. We're going to work to make sure that no one is denied a test that is medically necessary for COVID-19 because of the cost.
So some of the concerns that I've heard described would be like people who maybe because of their deductible or their insurance status, the bill comes back to them. Mm-hmm. I think there have been some examples where people got, maybe right. they even had insurance, they were hit with a big bill. Yeah, I'm trying to find out, like, what's the likelihood of that happening, or what's the possible scenario?
So we are aware of those reports, and actually even the report through the New York Times, we reached out to that individual who was in Pennsylvania through the Pennsylvania Insurance Department to link them to coverage. And so we will do everything we can to make sure that people are covered in terms of COVID-19. Again, we have been in discussions with DHS and the Pennsylvania Insurance Department to work with our insurance companies on that. Governor, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's
covered. Dr. Levine, Wayne County and Delaware County are big places. Can you be more specific about where these people live?
No, so we will not be more specific because we do not want to break their confidentiality. So we're not going to post a Google map and then say, ooh, they live there, right?
I didn't ask for a Google map, but yeah. I am asking for a little bit.
No, we will not be releasing more detail. But we are tracking the patient's contacts as per all the CDC's guidelines and all public health guidelines.
And what does a self-quarantine or home quarantine involve? I mean, and what do you do about family members?
Sure. So if the patient with these two individuals, they will be quarantined at home, and their close contacts will be quarantined at home as well. Dr. Watkins, can you expand about the home quarantine?
Sure. We ask individuals to stay at home and to monitor their health. They are not to be going to work or to school or to go out in public or to use public conveyances. And then we work with them about social distancing from their family or anyone they need to interact with in the home.
Is it illegal for them to go out?
For these two patients, it would be illegal. We have a legal quarantine. It would be illegal to go out. Yes, sir.
I think there was somebody over here.
Yes.
Just for general demographics, are these two people adults, elderly, children?
So they are adults. Okay. We're not going into any more demographic detail, but they're not children.
For perspective, I mean, how many people in Pennsylvania have been tested so far?
So we're not going with this specific number, but we have been following all of the guidelines from the CDC. Again, until Monday, you can only test by calling the CDC and getting it approved. And so we are now continuing to follow the CDC guidelines. But now that we can control our own testing, our expert staff is talking with physicians about liberalizing that so that we can make sure that we test all appropriate people in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
So we do not have any backlog.
Okay.
Of testing. So this is according to our regulations in terms of individuals' confidentiality. Has to do with our regs. So we're not, I know other states have identified a PUI, a person under investigation. We're really not identifying that, but we are telling you if it's positive.
It's a good point to point out. We don't have a backlog. And we have, the secretary and her team have been working diligently to make sure that there is plenty of capacity to do the testing that's required. So that's a central question, I know, for the press, certainly central question for me, and also it's something that the command center and Dr. Levine have been taking very seriously.
There's no backlog of tests.
Early in the week, it was said that you were able to do 6 per day.
Mm-hmm.
What are you up to now?
Sure. We've been increasing our capacity every day, and so we can do 20 to 25 specimens per day today, and by the weekend, we'll be able to do 125 to 150 specimens. Again, specimens can also be sent to the CDC, so if there was any concern about a backlog, we could send it to the CDC, but now that commercial laboratories will be up and running, there will certainly be no backlog of tests.
In terms of a state of emergency, I know several other states have declared it. How close are you planning on declaring
yes.
one?
The governor will answer that.
Yeah, as you know, Pennsylvania does not, at this point, have a health emergency declaration. So I will later this morning be signing a generic disaster declaration. The hope is that the legislature, when they come back, will actually give me the ability to do I've been asking for this for some time, to specifically call for a health emergency. But in the absence of that, I'll be declaring a disaster, making a disaster declaration, we call it, here in the next hour.
So it sounds like you're saying that you would prefer to do the health declaration right
Absolutely.
Now? Absolutely. What would be the main effect?
The different. First of all, a disaster declaration in Pennsylvania does not carry with it funding and things like that, but it gives us the ability to work across agencies and do things that we've done, like with the opioid epidemic. In Pennsylvania, there's only one type of disaster declaration, and it's very broad. It's very generic. I have been calling for a health disaster declaration ability so that I can focus on things having to do with public health emergency, which is what this is. So in the absence of that, a general declaration just simply gives me the ability to do a lot more things than I really need to do with the health declaration. It's fine. It accomplishes the same purpose. I'm trying to do this for the right reasons. It would just be, I think, a little more appropriate to have a health emergency declaration capacity.
And that's not something they can do in the very short term. They'll give you that ability.
They could.
Could they?
Yeah. They're coming back next 2 weeks, I guess. So,
okay, so you will ask, you plan to ask.
Oh, yeah, and I think there is a bill that's actually has been before the a year or so ago, a bill passed the Senate, got held up in the House. So there's legislation out there. But in the absence of that, I have the ability right now to declare a disaster declaration. I will do that. Anything else?
There are two strains we now know of COVID-19. When we're testing, this might be more a question for Dr. Levine, but when we're testing, are we testing for that distinction? We know one is a lot more aggressive than the other.
Thank you. Actually, I'm going to ask Dr. Watkins to answer that question.
Hi, those news reports are emerging, and we have seen those, but in Pennsylvania, we are not testing for strains. And we can get you that information whether CDC is at this time.
So CDC may be testing.
Maybe. We can get that information for you.
Okay. Kind of unrelated question. You mentioned earlier the quarantines and how they are legally enforced. Are these people actually being monitored then by law enforcement?
So we're not monitoring with law enforcement. They're voluntarily quarantining, but that does have the force of law for these two individuals, for these two patients. And so we'll be monitoring them pretty much daily by phone to make sure that they are that they're not getting sicker. If they're starting to get much more ill, then we will arrange them to get the medical care that they need. Dr. Watkins, anything else about that?
Voluntary quarantine, then. Is it a voluntary quarantine, or are they being compelled to be in their homes by force of law?
So it's both, meaning if we needed to, we could compel them, but they have received quarantine notices, but they're voluntarily staying. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, they have been directed to stay at home, and they have complied.
Yeah, but we know how hard it is to keep people. What if they want to go out to the corner store, the convenience store, can they do that?
No.
Yeah, because by the way, we saw, I think it was yesterday, I think it was from Pennsylvania, we saw the directions to if you have to go out, if you must go out, you know, avoid crowds, don't use public transportation. It sounds like this goes beyond that. They're not supposed to go,
they are not.
Must go out.
No.
This is two people.
Exactly.
This is not a general directive. This is two people.
Right.
Yes,
but
they're
that's
quarantined.
The status. They don't go out.
Right.
These individuals were known to have exposures, and so they've been quarantined, isolated, and have followed those directions. So they were in a risk category that we had directed them not to go out.
If you're not monitoring, how do you know that they're following the quarantine?
Well, we're in touch with them every day.
So you're relying on them to self-report?
We are relying on them to self-report.
Will this be the path going forward as more people end up with COVID-19 in Pennsylvania? You're going to rely on them to self-report that they are self-quarantined?
So that's the standard from the CDC and what all other states are following. So I'm not aware of any state that is placing guards on anybody's houses. So this is the standard that has been followed since we've had the United States has had its first case.
And how long would their quarantine be for?
14 days.
Are they in the middle of them, or they just started it now?
We're not going to go into detail about the two specific patients, but all the quarantines are for 14 days.
In terms of testing, how confident are you in your testing? I know there have been reports of some people testing negative twice, and then the third time they're positive.
Well, so we are very confident about our testing. I mean, we're following all of the CDC and FDA guidelines in terms of testing. We have a great public health laboratory, so we're very confident about the results. Two things, though. If someone is asymptomatic and they're negative, There's at least a five-day incubation period until the symptoms might develop and they might start to turn positive. So that incubation period is about 2 to 14 days. And so if they, if someone in another state had been tested and it was negative, that could have been part of the incubation period, and now it tests positive.
Yes. I know we've probably gone over this before, but who are you most concerned that this will affect? And why is it so important to make sure that that you keep these people at a distance from COVID-19?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wilkins?
Sure. I mean, we are still learning quite a bit about the disease, but we do know that those individuals who are elderly or have comorbidities, that would mean heart disease or asthma or COPD, are at increased risk of severity or death.
Yes?
Are you monitoring people that you came in contact with, and as more cases come up, how would you manage those growing numbers?
Sure. So through our contact tracing, people who have had close contact with these individuals will then be quarantined, and we'll be monitoring them. And they'd be quarantined for 14 days if they had close contact according to the guidelines from the CDC. So so that's how the contact tracing goes. It's kind of like a ring phenomenon. It keeps kind of going up.
Have you quarantined any of those folks who had contact with these two people?
Well, we just had these results. Our staff at the Incident Command Center are working through those contact lists as we speak.
Will they get the legal quarantine?
Yes.
Can I just let me say something. I think there's understandably a lot of focus on the legal aspects here. This is something people really want to do. They have a self-interest in preserving their health. And what I think the Department of Health is doing, as departments of health have done in the past, is to just indicate what people can do to ensure the best possible outcomes. And in these two cases, quarantine is something that leads to that. And so the enforcement is not really something that is an issue. People really want to cooperate here. Yeah.
Trying to imagine where it could be an issue. I think maybe somebody that really felt they really, really needed to go to work, or they had some responsibility that would make them want to follow the guidelines of yesterday, say, where, okay, if you must.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably come up with some example of somebody who might want to violate their own self-interest here. But again, I think the biggest thing working for all of us is that everybody wants to maintain their health. And what we're doing here with the Department of Health is trying to give them ways to do just that.
But the thing is, though, I understand that their self-interest, their own health, but I'm thinking in terms of the risk to other people, like if they would just feel like they have to go out.
I can't think of it.
So, yeah, I mean, if absolutely necessary, there is the force of law behind these quarantines. But to date, that certainly has not been necessary in Pennsylvania. And I'm not aware of any cases where that's been a big issue in the United States. You might be able to find a case, but not that we have been discussing regularly.
Were these tests confirmed today?
So the tests were done today. And we're positive. They're now being sent to the CDC for confirmation. So that's why we're saying a presumed test. The CDC guidelines is that all positive tests in the United States, the samples are then sent to the CDC for their lab to confirm it. I have not heard of any tests that have been positive in the states where the CDC has not confirmed it.
And I may have missed this detail about the quarantine, but they're at home quarantine.
That is correct.
Are they apart from their families?
So what Dr. Watkins has said is that we asked them to practice social distancing and keeping a certain way apart, a certain number of feet apart from their families, but they're not separated from their families. But their families will need to be quarantined as well. Yes?
I don't know if you mentioned this, but how long were they out in the world innocently?
So we're not really going over the specific information about these specific patients, because again, when people know them, they'll be able to track down who they are, and that violates their confidentiality and our regulations.
Doctor, do you have any indication that these two people were in large crowded settings of people in a school building, at a concert, anything like that? That is a
Dr. Watkins.
No, we are aware that one case traveled extensively in Europe, and including to level three travel warning countries, and did not move around in Pennsylvania upon return. We're also aware that one of the cases had exposure to a confirmed case in another state, and we became aware of that right away, and they've been in isolation or quarantine.
So the exposure in Pennsylvania, you believe, is relatively limited?
It's under investigation, but we think not at this time, but it's under investigation.
I might be wrong. Isn't that called community spread if they get it from someone else in another state? And or is that?
That's not.
So what state were they in?
We're not releasing those details.
But it doesn't make – I understand it doesn't make sense just in terms of using language, but the term community spread has a specific public health meaning, and it doesn't meet that criteria.
That would be like here in Pennsylvania or in this
– That's it. That would mean that someone pops up positive and they have no travel history, they have no known exposure, and we have no idea how they got it. That has happened in California, in Washington, and I believe in Massachusetts. But that's not what these cases are. So we have no known community spread in Pennsylvania, the way community spread is defined by public health officials.
And then here we are now that we know this. We're about to declare a disaster emergency. What's going to be done differently today at hospitals, with EMS providers, with the people who are dealing with
Things aren't – I mean, well, for in terms of we'll be doing extensive contact tracing for these patients. So all of that is going to proceed. But the rest of our emergency preparedness is going to continue as it was. And we've been doing this for 5 weeks.
I think that's the point. And what Dr. Levine just said is the point. We've been doing this for 5 weeks now. And there are really three prongs to this. One is to make sure that the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the citizens know that we are monitoring this, that we are daily, less hourly, look all the time, looking at this. The command center has been up and running for 5 weeks now. So we are monitoring this. We're stockpiling the things and building up the capacity to do whatever we need to do. And the testing is one of those things that you brought up. I think one of the concerns early on was that there was a limited capacity to test. We have been working assiduously on that, and I think we're doing the department has done a phenomenal job. Just the understanding that we will do what it takes to make sure the Pennsylvanians are safe. We've been doing that for 5 weeks. This is no different. We weren't sure. We didn't know when a presumed confirmed case would arise, but we were pretty sure it was going to happen. And it has. But we were ready for it, and we'll continue to do what we've been doing.
And just to follow up on that, I know this is all costing money. How dependent are we on that federal funding, the $8.3 billion that they're trying to get?
Well,
doesn't happen.
We have funds internally that we've taken steps to make sure that we have resources here in Pennsylvania. That's how we've been able to get new equipment. That's how we've been able to make sure that we're stockpiling the things we have to stockpile. We have the resources here, and if we get help from the federal government, that'll be great. Yes.
And just going forward, if and when there are more presumed or confirmed cases, how will you be kind of releasing that information to the public so they know, how that works?
We want to be transparent. That's why this happened this morning. I got a notification this morning at about 6:15, I think. We are here a few hours later, and we'll continue to make sure that we're as open and transparent as we can possibly be. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody.
You just heard Governor Tom Wolf, along with Pennsylvania Secretary of Health Dr. Rachel Levine, announcing that two cases have been confirmed of the coronavirus. I say confirmed. Maybe I shouldn't go that far. They have to be confirmed with the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. But suspected cases here in Pennsylvania detected, one in Delaware County, one in Wayne County. Of course, Wayne County in the northeastern part of the state, southeastern for Delaware County. Governor Tom Wolf has announced that he is declaring a disaster. He's making a disaster declaration. The legislature is not in session now, but he said he will be making this declaration within the hour today. Some other news, the governor and secretary of health advised Pennsylvanians who have questions to go to the website pa.gov, and there's a banner at the top of the page there about the coronavirus where you can learn the latest information. I'm joined now on the phone by WITF's Transforming Health reporter, Brett Scholes. Brett, are you there? Okay, that was what I was afraid of, is that Brett was, you heard Brett's voice during the press conference, and he is probably still wrapping up some of the, getting some more questions answered. A lot of questions from reporters about this. And as you probably could tell, the administration and Dr. Levine were hesitant to provide specific information on the two people who have been diagnosed with the coronavirus because of privacy reasons. But it was mentioned that they are quarantined, that they are in isolation now away from other people. That is one of the main concerns about the spread of this virus, is that those who have been tested, who have tested positive for it, not come into contact with crowds, with other people, so that it can be spread. But as Governor Wolf said, it was not a surprise that the coronavirus would be detected here in Pennsylvania. We think about the last 5 weeks, this virus has spread relatively quickly. I mean, started with just a few dozen cases in one city in China, and then almost overnight, each night, there would be someone else. You know, the numbers would double in China. Then it made it overseas, and we're at a point now in the United States where there are more than two dozen deaths that are attributed to the coronavirus. Just yesterday, New Jersey had their first case detected. Maryland had their first cases detected, and now here it is in Pennsylvania. So, well, I understand we are not going to be able to talk with Brett Scholes because he is busy working on getting more questions answered. But throughout the day, tune into WITF for the latest updates on the coronavirus and what is happening here in Pennsylvania. Brett will have reports on that, I'm sure, so be sure to tune in. What we're going to do now is join 1A in progress. Thanks for being with us today.